Chapter 18. I am the weapon. Into the light. Nemesis. The gun cutter climbed the layers of cloud, punching through pockets of turbulent air thrown into the atmosphere by storm cells, the newborn thunderheads spawning in the wake of orbit fall munitions. Somewhere behind it, down on Dagonet's surface, the landscape was being dissected as lance fires swept back and forth. The killing rains of energy and ballistic warheads had broken the boundaries of the capital city limits. Now they were escaping, to spread across the trembling ground, cutting earth like a keen skinning knife crossing soft flesh. The burning sky cradled the arrow-proud ship, which spun and turned as it wove a path through the cascades of plasma. No human pilot could have managed such a feat, but the Ultio's helmsman was less a man and more the ship itself. He flew the vessel through the tides of boiling air as a bird would ride a thermal, his hands the stabilizers across the bow, his legs the blazing nozzles of the thrusters, fuel blood pumping through his rumbling engine heart. Ultio's lone passenger was strapped into an acceleration couch at the very point of the ship's cramped bridge, watching waves of heat ripple across the invisible bubble of void shields from behind a ring-framed cockpit canopy. Cal muttered into the mastoid vox pickup affixed to his jawbone, sub-vocalizing his words into the humming reader in the arm of the couch. As the words spilled out of him, he breathed hard and worked on attending to his injuries. The pilot had reconfigured the gravity field in the cockpit to offset the G-force effects of their headlong flight, but Kel could still feel the pressure upon him. But he was thankful for small mercies. Had he not been so protected, the lift-off acceleration from the port would have crushed him into a blackout, perhaps even punctured a lung with one of his cracked ribs. It remained an effort to speak, though. But he did it because he knew he was duty-bound to give his report. Even now, the Ultio's clever subordinate machine brains were uploading and encoding the contents of the memory spool from Iota's skull helm, and the pages of overly analytical logs Tariel had kept in his cogitator gauntlet. When they were done, that compiled nugget of dense data would be transmitted via burst signal to the ship's drive unit, still hiding in orbit, within the wreckage of a dead space station. But not without his voice to join them, Kel decided. He was mission commander. At the end, the lay of the choices were his responsibility, and he would not shirk that. Finally, he ran out of words and bowed his head. Tapping the controls of the reader, he pressed the playback switch to ensure his final entry had been embedded.
"My name is Aristide Kel," he heard himself saying. "Assassin at Mark of the Clade Vindicari, Epsilon Dan. And I have defied my orders."
Nodding, he silenced himself, discarding the mastoid patch. Kel's voice seemed strange and distant to him. It was less a report he had made and more of a confession. Confession. The loaded connotations of that word made him glance down to where he had secured Jenica's golden aquila about the wrist of his glove. He searched himself, trying to find a meaning, a definition for the emotion clouding his thoughts, but there was nothing he could grasp. Kel pressed another switch and sent the vox recording to join the rest of the data packet. Outside, the glowing sky had darkened through blue to purple to black, taking the rush of air with it. Ultio was beyond the atmosphere now, and still climbing. Each breath he took felt tainted and metallic. Thick fluids congested at his throat, and he swallowed them back with a grimace. The smell in his nostrils was no one's blood but his own, and while the painkillers he had injected into his neck had gone some way towards keeping him upright, they were wearing thinner by the moment. An indicator rune on the control console flared green. Ultio had been sent a line-of-sight signal from the drive unit. Out there in the wreckage-strewn orbits, the drive module was awakening, stealthily turning power to its warp engine and sublight drives. In moments, the astropath and navigator on board would be roused from their sense-depth slumber. The Ultio's descent module needed only to cross the space to the other section of the ship and dock. Then, reunited, the vessel could run for the void and the escape of the Immaterium. Kel leaned forwards to stare out of the canopy. The only flaw in that otherwise simple plan was the gathering of warships between the gun cutter and the drive module. An armada barred his way. Starships the size of a metropolis, crested with great knife-shaped bows, blocks of hideously beweaponed metal like the heads of godhammers, each one detailed in shining steel and gold, each with the device of an opened, baleful eye about them, glaring ready hate into the dark. At the center of the fleet, a behemoth. Kel recognized the lines of a uniquely lethal vessel. A battle barge of magnificent gargantuan proportions, haloed by clouds of fighter escorts. The Vengeful Spirit, flagship of the Warmaster Horus Lupercal.
"Pilot,"
he said, his voice husky with the pain.
"Put us on an intercept heading with the command ship. Put all available power to the aura cloak."
The cyborg helmsman clicked and whirred.
"Increased aura cloak use will result in loss of void shield potentiality."
He glared at the visible parts of the pilot's near-human face, peering from the command podium.
"If they can't see us, they can't hit us."
"They will hit us," it replied flatly. "Intercept vector places Ultio in high threat quadrant. Multiple enemy weapon arcs."
"Just do as I say!"
Kel shouted, and he winced at the jag of pain it caused him.
"And open a link to the navigator."
"Complying."
The Vindicare thought he heard a note of grievance in the reply as the gun cutter turned, putting its bow on the Vengeful Spirit. The sensors were showing the first curious returns from the picket ships in Horus's fleet. They were sweeping the area for a trace, uncertain if their scry sensors had seen something. But the Ultio's aura cloak was generations ahead of common naval technology. They would be inside the fleet's inner perimeter before anyone on the picket vessels could properly interpret what they had seen. Another rune on the console glowed. A vox channel was open between the forward module and the drive section. Kel spoke quickly, fearful that the transmission would undo all the work of the cloak if left active a second too long.
"Mrs. Kel, stand by to receive encoded burst transmission. Release only on Omnis Octal authority."
He took a shaky breath.
"New orders supersede all prior commands. Protocol Perditus. Expedite immediate. Repeat, go to Protocol Perditus."
It seemed like long, long seconds before the navigator's whispering, papery voice returned through the speaker grill.
"This will be difficult," it said. "But the attempt will be made."
Kel reached for the panel to cut the channel just as the navigator spoke again.
"Good luck, assassin."
The rune went dark, and Kel's hand dropped. Beyond the canopy, laser fire probed the sky around the ship, and ahead, the battle barge grew to blot out the darkness. Close-range las cannons on the hull of the drive module blew apart the paper-thin sheath of metals hiding the aft section of the ship, and the Ultio's drive section blasted free of the station wreck in a pulse of detonation. Fusion motors unleashed the tiny suns at their cores and pushed the craft away, climbing the acceleration curve in a glitter of void shields and displaced energy. In moments, the vessel was rising towards 1/4 light speed. Picket ships on the far side of the Warmaster's fleet, ex-Imperial Navy frigates and destroyers crewed only by human officers, saw it running and opened fire. Most of the ships belonging to the Dagonetti had been obliterated over the past few hours, and the stragglers had either been forced down to the surface or cut in two by their beam lances. Targeting solutions on the odd craft that had suddenly appeared on their holoscopes behaved unexpectedly, however. Weapon locks drifted off it, unable to find a true. Scans gave conflicting readings. The ship was monstrously overpowered for something of its tonnage. It seemed unmanned, and then it seemed not. And strangest of all, the glimmer of a building warp signature built up around its flanks the further it strayed away from the gravity shadow of the planet, racing for the jump point. Warships dropped out of formation and powered after it, following the unidentified craft up and out of the plane of the Dagonet system's ecliptic. They would never catch it. Alone now on their headless beast of a vessel, the Ultio's navigator and astropath communed with one another in a manner most uncommon for their respective kinds. With words. And what they shared was an understanding of mutual purpose. Protocol Perditus. A coded command string known to them both, to which there was only one response. They were to leave their area of operation on immediate receipt of such an order and follow a preset series of warp space translations. They would not stop until they lay under the light of Sol. The mission was over. Abandoned. Weapons fire haloed the space around the ship as it plunged towards the onset of critical momentum, the first vestiges of a warp gate forming in the void ahead. The blood continued to stream from Erebus's nostrils as he shoved his way out of the elevator car and through the cluster of helots waiting on the command deck. The fluid matted his beard and he grimaced, drawing a rough hand across his face. The psychic shock was fading, mercifully, but for a brief while it had felt as if it would cut him open. There, in his chambers aboard the flagship, meditating in the gloom over his spodomancy and Mambila divination, he attempted to find an answer. The eightfold paths were confused, and he could not see their endpoints. Almost from the moment they had arrived in the Dagonet system, Erebus had been certain that something was awry. His careful plans, the works he had conceived under the guidance of the Great Ones, normally so clear to him, were fouled by a shadow he could not source. It perturbed him, and to a degree undeserving of such emotion. This was only a small eddy in the long scheme, after all. This planet, this action, a minor diversion from the preordained works of the Great Theatre. And yet Horus Lupercal was doing such a thing more and more. Oh, he followed where Erebus led, that was certain, but he did it less quickly than he had at first. The Warmaster's head was being turned, and he was willful with it. At times the word-bearer allowed himself to wonder, was the master of the rebels listening to other voices than he? Not to dwell, though. This was to be expected. Horus was a Primarch. One could no more hope to shackle one down and command him than a person might saddle an ephemeral animus. The first chaplain reminded himself of this. Horus must be allowed to be Horus, he told himself. And when the time is upon him, he will be ready. Still, the voyage to Dagonet, the fogging of the lines, that did not disperse. If anything, it grew worse. In his meditations, Erebus had searched the egosphere of the planet turning below them, but the screaming and the fear drowned out every subtle tell. All he could divine was a trace of the familiar. The pariah thing. His spear. Perhaps no longer on this world. Perhaps just the spore of its passing, but certainly something. For a while he was content to accept this as the truth. But with the passing of the hours, Erebus could not leave the matter be. He worried at it, picked at the Psymarch like a fresh scab. Why had Spear come to Dagonet? What possible reason could there be for the killer to venture off the path Erebus had laid out for him? And, more to the troubling point of it, why had Horus chosen to show the flag here? The word-bearer believed that coincidence was something that existed only in the minds of men too feeble-brained to see the true spiderweb of the universe's cruel truth. It vexed him that the answer was there below on the planet, if only he could reach out for it. And so he was utterly unprepared for what came next. The rising of the black shriek of a sudden psionic implosion. In the chamber, sensing the edges of it, turning his thoughts to the dark places within and allowing the void to speak to him. A mistake. the death energy of his assassin proxy, hurtling up from the planet's surface, the escaping demon beast brushing him as it fled back to the safety of the immaterium. It hit him hard, and he was not ready for it. He felt Spear die, and with him died the weapon power. The phantom gun at the head of the unknowing Emperor shattered before it could even be fired. Erebus's fury drove him from his chambers, through the corridors of the ship. His plan, this thread of the pathway, had been broken, and for Hades' sake he would know why. He would go down to Dagonet and sift the ashes of it through his fingers. He would know why. Composing himself, the word-bearer entered the Lupercal's court without waiting to be granted entry. But even as Malaghurst moved to block his path, the Warmaster turned from the great window and beckoned Erebus closer. He became aware of alert sirens hooting, and beyond the armor glass, fashioned in the oval of an open eye, he saw rods of laser fire sweeping the void ahead of the flagship's prow. Horus nodded to him, the hellish light of the weapon's discharges casting his hard-edged face like blunt stone. He was, as ever, resplendent in his battle gear. In his haste, Erebus had come to the court still in his dark robes, and for a moment the word-bearer felt every bit of his inferiority to the Warmaster, as Horus seemed to loom over him. None of this he showed, however. He bottled it away, his aspect never changing. Erebus was a prince of lies, and well practiced with it. "My lord," he began, "if it pleases the Warmaster, I have a request to make, a matter to address."
"On the surface?"
Horus looked away.
"We'll visit Dagonet soon enough, my friend, for the work to be done."
Erebus maintained his outwardly neutral aspect, but within it took an effort to restrain his tension.
"Of course, but perhaps if I might have leave to venture down before the rites proper, I could smooth the path, as it were."
"Soon enough," Horus repeated, his tone light. But the chaplain knew then that was the end to it.
Malaghurst hobbled closer, bearing a data slate. He shot the word-bearer a look as he stepped in front of him.
"A message from the pickets," he said. "The other target is too fast. They scored hits, but it will make space before they catch it."
The Warmaster's lips thinned.
"Let it go. What of the other? Our ghost?"
He gestured at the inferno raging outside.
"Indeterminate," the equerry sniffed. "Gun crews on the perimeter ships report phantom signals, multiple echoes. They're carving up dead sky and finding nothing."
Erebus saw his scarred face's perpetual frown deepening.
"I've drawn back the fighter screen, as you ordered, lord."
Horus nodded.
"If he dares come so close to me, I want to look him in the eyes."
The word-bearer followed the Warmaster's gaze out through the windows. The slate in Malaghurst's gnarled fingers emitted a melodic chime, at odds with the urgency of its new message.
"Sensors read something," said the equerry. "Closing fast. A collision course. But weapons can't find it."
"An aura cloak," said Erebus, peering into the stormy dark. "But such a device is beyond the Dagonetti."
"Yes."
Horus smiled, unconcerned.
"Do you see him?"
The Warmaster stepped to the window and pressed his hands to the grey glass. Out among the maelstrom of energy, as javelins of fire crossed and recrossed one another, scouring the sky for the hidden attacker, for one instant the chaplain saw something like oil moving over water, just the suggestion of a raptor-like object, lensing the light of the distant stars behind it.
"There!"
he pointed. Malaghurst snapped out a command over his vox.
"Target located! Engage and destroy!"
The gun crews converged their fire. The craft was close, closer than the illusory ghost image had suggested. Unbidden, Erebus backed away a step from the viewing portal. Horus's smile grew wider, and the word-bearer heard the words he whispered, a faint rumble in the deepest register.
"Kill me," said the Warmaster. "If you dare."
Ultio burned around him. The pilot was already dead, in the loosest sense. The cyborg's higher mental functions boiled in the short-circuit surge from a hit on the starboard wing. But his core brain was intact, and through that, the ship dodged and spun as the sky itself seemed to turn upon them. The ship trailed pieces of fuselage in a comet tail of wreckage and burning plasma. The deck trembled and smoke filled the bridge compartment. A vista of red warning runes met Kell's eyes wherever he looked. Autonomic systems had triggered the last chance protocols, opening an iris hatch in the floor to a tiny savior pod mounted beneath the cockpit. Blue light spilling from the hatch beckoned the Vindicare for a moment. He had his Exeter's pistol at his hip, and he was still alive. He would only need to take a step. But where? Even if he survived the next 10 seconds, where could he escape to? What reason did he have to live? His mission, the mission, was all Aristide Kell had left in his echoing, empty existence. The command tower of the Vengeful Spirit rose through the forward canopy, acres of old steel and black iron, backlit by volleys of energy and the red threads of lasers. Set atop it was a single unblinking eye of grey and amber glass, lined in shining gold. And within the eye, a figure. Kell was sure of it. An immense outline, a demigod, daring him to come closer. His hand found the manual throttle bar, and he pressed it all the way to the red line, as the killing fires found his range. He looked up once again, and the first sighting mantra he had ever been taught pressed itself to the front of his thoughts. 4 words, a simple koan whose truth had never been more real than it was in this moment. Kell said it aloud as he fell towards his target.
I am the weapon.
Across the mountainous towers of the Imperial Palace, the sun was rising into the dusky sky. But its light had yet to reach all the wards and precincts of the great fortress city. Many districts were still dormant, their populace on the verge of waking for the new day. Others had been kept from their slumber by matters that did not rest. In the ornate corridors of power, there was quiet and solemnity. But in the shrouds, any pretense at decorum had been thrown aside. Sire Eversor's fist came down hard on the surface of the rosewood table with an impact that set the cut-glass water goblets atop it rattling. His anger was unchained, his eyes glaring out through his bone mask.
Feya!
He spat, the word laden with venom.
I warned you all when this idiotic plan was proposed. I warned you that it would not work.
And now we have burned our only chance to kill the War Master, muttered Sire Vanus, his synth-altered voice flat and toneless like that of a machine. The master of Clade Eversor, unable to remain seated in his chair, arose in a rush and rounded the octagonal table. The other sires and siresses of the Officio Assassinorum watched him stalk towards the powerful hooded figure standing off to one side in the glow of a loom globe.
We never should have listened to you, he growled. All you did was cost us more men, custodian.
At the head of the table, the Master of Assassins looked up sharply, his silver mask reflecting the light. Behind him there was nothing but darkness, and the man appeared to be cradled in a dark, depthless void.
Yes, spat Sire Eversor. I know who he is. It could be no other than Constantine Valdor.
At this, the hooded man let his robes fall open, and the Captain General was fully revealed.
As you wish, he said. I have nothing to fear from you knowing my face.
I suspected so, ventured Cyrus Venenum, her face of green and gold porcelain tilting quizzically. Only the custodian guard would be so compelled towards ensuring the deaths of others before their own. Valdor shot her a look and smiled coldly.
If that is so, then in that way we are alike, milady.
Eversor, said the master, his voice level. Take your seat and show some restraint, if that is at all possible. The featureless silver mask reflected a twisted mirror of the snarling bone face.
Restraint,
said Sire Vindicare, his aspect hidden behind a marksman's spy mask.
With all due respect, my lord, I think we can all agree that the Eversor's anger is fully justified. Horus sent one of his men to die in his stead.
Sire Eversor sat once more, his tone bitter.
He must have been warned, or else he has a demon's luck.
That or something else,
Cyrus Venenum said darkly.
Missions fail,
interrupted the silk-faced mistress of the Calidus.
It has ever been thus. We knew from the start that this was a target like no other.
Across from her, the watchful steel skull concealing Sire Culexus bent forward.
And that is answer enough?
His whispering tones carried across the room.
6 more of our best are missing, presumed dead. And for what? So that we may sit back and be assured that we have learnt some small lesson from the wasting of their lives.
The skull's expression did not change, but the shadows gathered around it appeared to lengthen.
Operative Iota was important to my clade. She was a rarity, a significant investment of time and energy. Her loss does not go without mark.
There's always a cost, said Valdor.
Just not to you,
Venenum's retort was acid.
Our best agents and our finest weapons squandered, and still Horus Lupercal draws breath.
Perhaps he cannot be killed,
Sire Eversor snapped. Before the commander of the custodians could reply, the master of assassins raised his hand to forestall the conversation.
Sire Vanus, he began, shall we dispense with this hearsay and instead discuss what we know to be true of the fallout from our operation?
Vanus nodded, his flickering glassy mask shifting colour and hue.
Of course.
He pushed at a section of the pinkish-red wood, and the table silently presented him with a panel of brass buttons. With a few keystrokes, the hololithic projector hidden below came to life, sketching windows of flickering blue light above their heads. Displays showing tactical star maps, fragments of scout reports, and feeds from long-range observatories shimmered into clarity.
News from the Tabean sector is at best inconclusive. However, it appears that most, if not all, of the prime worlds along the length of the Tabean star's trade spine are now beyond the influence of imperial governance.
On the map display, globular clusters of planets winked from blue to red in rapid order, consumed by revolt.
The entire zone has fallen into anarchy. We have confirmation that the worlds of Thalat, Bowman, Dagonet, Tabia Prime, and Iesta Veracrux have all broken their ties with the lawful leadership of Terra and declared loyalty to the War Master and his rebels.
Sire Culexus made a soft hissing sound.
They fall as much from their fears as from the gun.
The War Master stands over them and demands they kneel, said Valdor. Few men would have the courage to refuse.
We can be certain of only 2 factors, the Vanus went on. One, Captain Luke Sedere of the 13th Company of the Sons of Horus, a senior general in the Turncoat Forces, has been terminated, apparently by the action of a sniper.
He glanced at Sire Vindicare, who said nothing.
2, Horus Lupercal is alive. Sedere's death is an important success, said the Master. But it is no substitute for the War Master. My clade has already engaged with the information emerging from the Tabean sector, said Sire Vanus. My infocytes are in the process of performing adjustments in the overt and covert media to best reflect the Imperium's position in this situation.
Papering over the cracks with quick lice, don't you mean?
Said Cyrus Calidus. The colours of the Vanus's shimmer mask blue shifted.
We must salvage what we can, milady. I'm sure...
Sure?
The silk mask tightened.
What are you sure of?
We have no specifics, no solutions. We've done nothing but tip our hand to the traitors.
The mood of the room shifted, and once again the anger and frustration simmering unchecked threatened to erupt. The master of assassins raised his hand once more, but before he could speak, a warning bell sounded through the room.
What is that?
Demanded Sire Vindicare.
What does it mean?
The shrouds.
The master was coming to his feet.
They've been compromised.
His silvered face suddenly turned towards one of the mahogany panelled walls, as if he could see right through it. With a bullet-sharp crack, ancient wood and rigid metals gave way, and a hidden door slammed open. Beyond it, in the ever-shifting puzzle of the changing corridors, 3 figures filled the space. two wore amber-gold armor chased with white and black accents, their faces set and grim. They were veteran space marines of the 7th Legiones Astartes in full combat plate. But eclipsing their presence was a warrior of stone cast and cold, steady gaze, standing a head higher than both of them. Rogel Dorn stepped into the shrouds, his battle gear glittering in the light of the loom globes. He cast his gaze around the room with an expression that might have been disgust, dwelling on Valdor, then the master, and finally the deep shadows engulfing the farthest side of the chamber. It was Cyrus Venenum who dared to shatter the shocked silence that came in the wake of Dorn's intrusion.
"Lord Astartes," she began, desperately trying to rein in her fear. "This is a sanctum of..."
The imperial fist did not even grace her with a look. He advanced towards the rosewood table and folded his arms across his titanic chest.
"Here you are," he said,
addressing his comments towards Valdor.
"I told you our conversation was not ended, Custodian."
"You should not be here, Lord Dorn," he replied.
"Neither should you,"
snapped the Primarch, his voice like breaking stones.
"But you brought both of us to it, to this place of subterfuge."
He said the last word as if it revolted him.
"This place is not within your authority, Astartes."
The voice of the Master of Assassins was altered and shifted, but still the edge of challenge was clear for all to hear.
"At this moment, it is."
Dorn turned his cold glare on the mirrored face staring up at him.
"My Lord Malkador."
A thrill of surprise threaded across the room as everyone at the sires and sireses turned to stare at the master.
"I knew it," hissed Culexus. "I always knew you were the Sigillite."
"This is a day of revelations," muttered Sire Vanus.
"I have just begun," Dorn rumbled.
With a sigh, Malkador reached up and removed the silver mask, setting it down on the table. He frowned, and an eddy of restrained telepathic annoyance rippled through the air.
"Well done, my friend. You've broken open an enigma."
"Not really," Dorn replied. "I made an educated guess. You confirmed it."
The Sigillite's frown became a brief, intent grimace.
"A victory for the Imperial Fists, then. Still, I have many more secrets."
The warrior king turned.
"But no more here today."
He glared at the other members of the officio.
"Masks off," he demanded. "All of you. I will not speak with those of such low character who hide their faces. Your voices carry no import unless you have the courage to place your name to them. Show yourselves."
The threat beneath his words did not need to break the surface. There was a moment of hush. Then movement. Sire Vindicari was first, pulling the spy mask from his face as if he were glad to be rid of it. Then Sire Eversor, who angrily tossed his fang and bone disguise onto the table. Sireess Calidus slipped the silk from her dainty face, and Vanus and Venenum followed suit. Sire Culexus was last, opening up his gleaming skull mask like an elaborate metal flower. The assassins looked upon their naked identities for the first time, and there was a mixture of potent emotions. Anger, recognition, amusement.
"Better," said Dorn.
"Now you have stripped us of our greatest weapon, Astartes,"
said Cyrus Calidus, a fall of rust-red hair lying unkempt over a pale face.
"Are you satisfied?"
The Primarch glanced over his shoulder.
"Brother Captain Efreid?"
One of the Imperial Fists at the door stepped forwards and handed a device to his commander, and in turn Dorn placed it on the table and slid it towards Sire Vanus.
"It's a data slate," he said.
"My warriors intercepted a starship beyond the edge of the Oort cloud, attempting to vector into the Sol system," Dorn told them.
"It identified itself as a common freighter, the Halis Fae. A name I imagine some of you might recognize."
"The crew?"
began Sire Eversor.
"None to speak of," offered Captain Efreid.
Dorn pointed at the slate.
That contains a datum capsule recovered from the vessel's mnemonic core. Mission logs, vox recordings, and vidpicts. He glanced at Malkador and the custodian. What is spoken of there is troubling. The sigillite nodded towards Sire Vanus.
Show us.
Vanus used a hair-fine connector to plug the slate into the open panel before him, and immediately the images in the ghostly hololith flickered and changed to a new configuration of data panes. At the fore was a vox thread, and it began to unspool as a man's voice, thick with pain, filled the air.
My name is Aristide Kerr, Assassinate Mark of the Clade Vindicari, Epsilon Dan. And I have defied my orders.
Valdor listened in silence, along with the rest of them, first to Kell's words, and then to fragments of the infocyte Tariel's interim logs. When Sire Vanus opened the kernel of data containing the vid records from Iota's final moments, he watched in mute disgust at the abomination that was the Black Pariah. As this horror unfolded before them, Sire Culexus bent forwards and quietly wept. They listened to it all. The discovery of the military situation on Dagonet and the plan to reignite the dying embers of the planet's civil war. Jenica Solm's rejection of the mission in favor of her own. The assassination of Sedere in Horus's stead and the brutal retribution it engendered. And at last, the existence of and lethal potential within the creature that called itself Spear, and the choice that the execution force had been forced to make. When they had heard as much as was necessary, the sigillite shouted at Sire Vanus to cease the playback. Valdor surveyed the faces of the Clade directors, each in their own way struggled to process what they had been brought by the Imperial Fists. Sire Eversaw, confusion in his gaze, turned on the Culexus.
That freakish monstrosity! You created that! For terror's sake, cousin, tell me this is not so!
I gave the orders myself, insisted the Psyker. It was destroyed!
Apparently not,
Dorn replied, his jaw tightening.
But it is dead now, yes? Said Sire Vanus. It must be.
Dorn's dark eyes flashed with anger.
A narrow view. That is all your kind ever possess. Do you not understand what you have done? Your so-called attempts at a surgical assault against Horus have become nothing of the kind.
His voice rose, like the sound of storm-tossed waves battering a shoreline.
Sedere's death has cost the lives of an entire planet's population. The Sons of Horus have taken revenge on a world because of what your assassins did there.
He shook his head.
If the counter-rebellion on Dagonet had been allowed to fade, if their war had not been deliberately and callously exacerbated, Horus would have passed them by. After my brothers and I have broken his betrayal, the Imperium would have retaken control of Dagonet. But now its devastation leads to the collapse of keystone worlds all across that sector. Now the traitors take a strong foothold there. And it will be my battle brothers and those of my kindred who must bleed to oust them.
He pointed at them all in turn.
This is what you leave behind you. This is what your kind always leave behind.
Valdor could remain silent no longer, and he stepped forward.
The suffering on Dagonet is a tragedy. None will deny that, he said. And yes, Horus has escaped our retribution once more. But a greater cause has been served, Lord Dorn. Kell and his force chose to preserve your father in exchange for letting your errant brother live. This assassin creature Spear is dead, and a great threat to the Emperor's life has been neutralized. I would consider that a victory.
Would you?
Dorn's fury was palpable, crackling in the air around him.
I am sure my father is capable of defending himself. And tell me, Captain General, what kind of victory exists in a war like the one you would have us fight?
He gestured at the room around them.
A war fought from hidden places under cover of falsehood. Innocent lives wasted in the name of dubious tactics. Underhanded, clandestine conflicts fueled by secrets and lies.
For a moment, Valdor half expected the Imperial Fist to rip up the table between them just so he could strike at the custodian. But then,
Like a tidal wave drawing back into the ocean, Dorne's anger seemed to subside. Valdor knew better, though. The Primarch was the master of his own fury, turning it inward, turning it to stony, unbreakable purpose.
"This war," Dorne went on,
sparing Malkador a glance,
"is a fight not just for the material, for worlds and for the hearts of men. We are in battle for ideals, at stake are the very best of the Imperium's ultimate principles. Values of pride, nobility, honor, and fealty. How can a veiled killer understand the meaning of such words?"
Valdor felt Malkador's eyes on him, and the tension in him seemed to dissipate. At once he felt a cold sense of conviction rise in his thoughts, and he matched the Imperial Fist's gaze, answering his challenge.
"No one in this room has known war as intimately as you have, my lord," he began. "And so surely it is you who must understand better than any one of us that this war cannot be a clean and gallant one. We fight a battle like no other in human history. We fight for the future. Can you imagine what might have come to pass if Kel and the rest of the execution force had not been present on Dagonet? If this creature's spear had been reunited with the rebel forces?"
"He would have attempted to complete his mission," said Sire Culexus. "Come to Terra, to enter the sphere of the Emperor's power and engage his murder gift."
"He would never have got that far," insisted Sire Vanus. "He would have been found and killed, surely. The Sigilite or the Emperor himself would have sent such an abomination and crushed it."
"Are you certain?" Valdor pressed. "Horus has many allies, some of them closer than we wish to admit. If this spear could have reached Terra, made his attack, even a failure to make the kill, a wounding, even."
He trailed off, suddenly appalled by the grim possibility he was describing.
"Such a psychic attack would have caused incredible destruction."
Dorne said nothing. For a moment it seemed as if the Primarch was sharing the same terrible nightmare that danced in the Custodian's thoughts, of his liege lord, mortally wounded by a lethal enemy, clinging to fading life while the Imperial Palace was a raging inferno all around him. Valdor found his voice once more.
"Your brother will beat us, Lord Dorne. He will win this war, unless we match him blow for blow. We cannot. We must not be afraid to make the difficult choices, the hardest decisions. Horus Lupercal will not hesitate."
"I am not Horus,"
Dorne snarled, the words striking the Custodian like a physical blow.
"And I will..."
"Enough."
The single utterance was a lightning bolt, captured in crystal, shattering everything around it, silencing them all with an unstoppable, immeasurable force of will. Rogel Dorne turned to the sound of that voice as every man, woman, and Astartes in the chamber sank to their knees, each of them instinctively knowing who had uttered it. The Sigilite was the last to do so, shooting a final, unreadable look at the Primarch of the Imperial Fists before he, too, took to a show of obeisance. The question escaped Dorne's lips.
"Father?"
The darkness, the great curtain of shadows that had filled the furthest corner of the chamber, now became lighter, the walls and floor growing more distinct by the moment as the unnatural gloom faded. He blinked. Strange how he had looked directly into that place and seen it, but without really seeing it at all. It had been in plain sight for everyone in the room, even he, and yet none of them had registered the strangeness of it. Now, from the black, came light. A figure stood there, effortlessly dominating the space, his patrician features marred by a mixture of turbulent emotions that gave even the mighty Imperial Fist a second's pause. The Emperor of Mankind wore no armor, no finery or dress uniform, only a simple surplice of grey cloth threaded with subtle lines of purple and gold silk, and yet he was still magnificent to behold. Perhaps he had been listening to them all along, yet it seemed to be a defiance of the laws of nature that a being so majestic, so lit with power, could stand in a room among men, Astartes, and the greatest mortal psyker who ever lived, and be as a ghost. But then he was the Emperor, and to all questions, that was sufficient answer. His father came towards him, and Rogel Dorn bowed deeply, at length joining the others at bended knee before the master of the Imperium. The Emperor did not speak. Instead, he strode across the shrouds to the tall windows where the sailcloth drapes hung like frozen cataracts of shadow. With a flick of his great hands, Dorn's father took a fist of the cloth and snatched it away. The hangings tore free and tumbled to the floor. He walked the perimeter of the room, ripping away every last cover until the chamber was flooded with the bright honey-yellow luminosity of the Himalayan dawn. Dorn dared to glance up and saw the golden radiance striking his father. It gathered its brightness to him, as if it were an embrace. For an instant, the sunlight was like a sheath of glowing armor about him. Then the Primarch blinked, and the moment passed.
"No more shadows," said the Emperor.
His words were gentle, summoning, and all the faces in the room turned to look upon him. He placed a hand on Dorn's shoulder as he passed him by, and then repeated the gesture with Valdor.
"No more veils."
He beckoned them all to stand, and as one they obeyed, and yet in his presence each of them felt as if they were still at his feet. His aura towered over them, filling the emotions of the room. Dorn received a nod, as did Valdor.
"My noble son, my loyal guardian, I hear both your words, and I know that there is right in each of you. We cannot lose sight of what we are and what we aspire to be. But we cannot forget that we face the greatest enemy and the darkest challenge."
In the depths of his father's eyes, Dorn saw something no one else could have perceived. So transient and fleeting, it barely registered. He saw sorrow, deep and unending, and in his heart ached with an empathy only a son could know. The Emperor reached out a hand and gestured towards the dawn, as it rose to fill the room around them.
"It is time to bring you into the light. The Officio Assassinorum have been my quiet blade for too long, an open secret none dared to speak of, but no longer. Such a weapon cannot exist forever in the shadows, answerable to no one. It must be seen to be governed. There must be no doubt of the integrity behind every deed, every blow landed, every choice made. Or else we count for naught."
His gaze turned to Dorn, and he nodded slowly to his son.
"Because of this I am certain. In the war to come, every weapon in the arsenal of the Imperium will be called to bear."
"In your name, father."
The Primarch returned the nod.
"In your name."
Dagonet was all but dead now, her surface a mosaic of burning cities, churned oceans and glassed wastelands. And yet this was a show of restraint from the sons of Horus. Had they wished it, the world could have suffered the fate of many that had defied the Warmaster, cracked open by cyclonic torpedo barrages, shot into key tectonic target sites, remade into a sphere of molten earth. Instead, Dagonet was being prepared. It would be of use to the Warmaster and his march to victory. Erebus stood atop the ridgeline and looked down into the crater that was all that remained of the capital. The far side of the vast bowl of dirty glass and melted rock was lost to him through a mist of poisonous vapour, but he saw enough of it to know the scope of the whole. Transports were coming in from all over the planet, bringing those found still alive to this place. He watched as a stormbird swooped low over the crater and opened its ventral cargo doors, dropping civilians like discarded trash amid the masses that had already been herded into the broken landscape. The people were arranged in lines that cut back and forth across one another, crosses laid over crosses. Astartes stood at equidistant points around the kilometers of the crater's edge, their presence alone forbidding any survivor from making an attempt to climb out and flee. Those that had, at the beginning, were blasted back into the throng, bifurcated by bolt shells. The same fate befell those who dared to move out of the eightfold lines carved in the dust. The supplicants, for they did not deserve to be known as prisoners, gave off moans and whispers of terror that washed back and forth over the word-bearer chaplain like gentle waves. It was tempting to remain where he stood and lose himself in the sweet sense of the dark emotions brimming across the great hollow. But there were other matters to attend to. He heard footsteps climbing the wreckage-strewn side of the crater, and moved to face the Astartes approaching him. All about them, thin wisps of steam rose into the air from the heat of the bombardment still escaping from the shattered earth.
First Chaplain,
Devrim Corder gave him a wary salute.
You wish me to report to you regarding your operative. We located the remains you were looking for.
Spear? He frowned. Corder nodded and tossed something towards him. Erebus caught the object. At first glance, it seemed to be a blackened, heat-distorted skull. But on closer examination, the cleft, scything jawbone and distended shape were clearly the work of forces other than lethal heat and flame. He held it up and looked into the black pits of its eyes. The ghost of energies clung to it, and Erebus had a sudden impression of tiny flecks of gold leaf on the wind, fading into nothingness.
The rest of the corpse was retrieved along with that,
Corder pointed.
I found other bodies in the same area, among the ruins of the starport terminal. Agents of the Emperor, it would appear.
Erebus was unconcerned about collateral damages. His irritation churned, and he brushed Corder's explanation away with a wave of his hand.
Leave it to rot. Failures have no use to me.
He dropped the skull into the dust.
What was it, Wordbearer?
Corder came closer, his tone becoming more insistent.
That thing. Did you unleash something on this backwater world? Is that why they killed my commander?
I am not to blame for that, Erebus retorted. Look elsewhere for your reasons. The words had barely left his lips before the chaplain felt a stiffening in his chest, as a buried question began to rise in him. He pushed it away before it formed, and narrowed his eyes at Corder. Spear was a weapon. A gambit played and lost. Nothing more.
It stank of witchcraft,
said the Astartes. Erebus smiled thinly. Don't concern yourself with such issues, Brother Sergeant. This was but one of many other arrows in my quiver.
I grow weary of your games and your riddles, said Corder.
He swept his hand around.
What purpose does any of this serve?
The warrior's question struck a chord in the word-bearer, but he did not acknowledge it. It is the game, Corder. The greatest game. We take steps. We build our power, gain strength for the journey to terror. Soon, he looked up. The stars will be right.
Forgive him, Brother Sergeant, said a new voice,
an armoured form moving out of the mist below them.
My brother Lorgar's kinsmen enjoy their verbiage more than they should.
Corder bowed, and Erebus did the same, as Horus crossed the broken earth, his heavy ceramite boots crunching on the blasted fragments of rock. Beyond him, Erebus saw two of the War Master's Mournival in quiet conversation, both with eyes averted from their master.
You are dismissed, Brother Sergeant, Horus told his warrior.
I require the First Chaplain's attention on a matter.
Corder gave another salute, this one crisp and heartfelt, his fist clanking off the front of his breastplate. Erebus fancied he saw a scrap of apprehension in the warrior's eyes, more than just the usual respect for his Primarch. A fear, perhaps, of consequences that would come if he was seen to disobey, even in the slightest degree. As Corda hurried away, Erebus felt the War Master's steady, piercing gaze upon him.
"What do you wish of me?"
he asked, his tone without weight. Horus's hooded gaze dropped to the blackened skull in the dust.
"You will not use such tactics again in the prosecution of this conflict."
The word-bearer's first impulse was to feign ignorance, but he clamped down on that before he opened his mouth. Suddenly he was thinking of Luke Sedere, outspoken Sedere, whose challenges to the War Master's orders, while trivial, had grown to become constant after the progression from Istvan. Some had said he was in line to fill the vacant place in the Mournival, that his contentious manner was of need to one as powerful as Horus. After all, what other reason could there have been for the War Master to grant Sedere the honour of wearing his mantle? A rare chill ran through him, and Erebus nodded.
"As you command, my lord."
Was it possible?
The word-bearer's thoughts were racing. Perhaps Horus Lupercal had known from the beginning that the Emperor's secret killers were drawing close to murder him. But for that, he would need eyes and ears on Terra. Erebus had no doubt the War Master's allies reached the heart of his father's domain, but into the Imperial Palace itself? That was a question he dearly wished to answer. Horus turned and began to walk back down the ridge. Erebus took a breath and spoke again.
"May I ask the reasoning behind that order?"
The War Master paused and then glanced over his shoulder. His reply was firm and assured, and brooked no argument.
"Assassins are a tool of the weak, Erebus, the fearful. They are not a means to end conflicts, only to prolong them."
He paused, his gaze briefly turning inward.
"This war will end only when I look my father in the eyes. When he sees the truth I will make clear to him, he will know I am right. He will join me in that understanding."
Erebus felt a thrill of dark power.
"And if the Emperor does not?"
Horus's gaze became cold.
"Then I, and I alone, will kill him."
The Primarch walked on, throwing a nod to his officers. On his command, the lines of melter bombs buried beneath the hundreds of thousands of survivors detonated at once, and Erebus listened to the chorus of screams as they perished in a marker of sacrifice and offering. That was Nemesis by James Swallow. Narrated by Jonathan Keeble. This recording is copyrighted by Games Workshop 2015.